Hey, welcome to Our Altered World. If you've been feeling overwhelmed by the giant that is climate change, you're not alone. I'm Neil, and here we celebrate the inspiring work of individuals and organizations making real positive strides that you may not have heard about. My hope is for our conversations here to make you feel inspired and reconnected to our planet. And with that being said, I would love to introduce Farina from Seratu Atai.
Hey Neil, and everyone who's with us today.
Thank you so much for joining us, Farina. I am super excited to jump into all that you do and your incredible work over in Malaysia. Now, before we begin, I'd love for you to like briefly tell our listeners about yourself and Seratu Atai.
All right, great. Thank you again for having me in this show. It's a really great opportunity for me to introduced the world about the Burnian elephant. So my name is Farina Osman. I am currently in Borneo, in Malaysia, Borneo. And Seratu Atai is an organization that I started in 2018 with the mission to create coexistence between the Burnian elephants and the people. We don't want to push people We want people to be willing to accept elephant as part of the landscape. So that's the goal of our organization.
That's beautiful. Now, Farina, how did you end up in this sort of path? Like, what was your journey that led you here?
Yeah, I feel that actually it's the destiny actually that bring me working with the elephants, because to be honest, there was no plan at all to come to Borneo, because I'm not originally from Borneo. I'm from Peninsula Malaysia. Basically, okay. I have to cross the South China Sea to live here. Mm-hmm. So that was in 2003. I was offered to do a degree in conservation biology. In 2003, conservation biology is still an alien field here in Malaysia. So I thought that, okay, why not?
You know, that's so surprising, because yeah, you have so much to conserve in Malaysia.
I know, because we brought up to become a doctor, engineer, pharmacy, you know, and then mm-hmm, look after mm-hmm. the family. That's the typical yes. way, you know, when we're growing up in Asia. But then I'm very lucky in this sense, because my family, they knows that once Farina wants to do something, nobody can stop her.
So I love that. You always have that drive.
So when I told my family that, hey, I'm going to Borneo, I'm going to learn about this field, biology, and I'll come back. And then when I was about to finish my degree, I get to meet the Borneo elephants. This was in the captivity, because people were saying that our elephant is a pygmy elephant. So I was challenged to prove that, is it true that our Borneo elephant is a pygmy elephant or not? So, and then just before I finished this project, I got another offer to do a master degree on conservation genetics of elephant. You see, like one door open to another door, and it's yes. always about elephants. And again, this is...
You're like, there's something here. There's something about these elephants
exactly,
that are drawing me in.
Exactly. So I feel that they choose me, and at the same time, I choose also to listen and to be their voice.
That's beautiful. Now, the name Seratu Atai, talk us through that. Where did the name come from? So I know it's got something to do with the local language and concepts around that.
First of all, well done for, you know, saying the word correctly, Seratu Atai, because there are still a lot of people still asking me why you don't use just some English names for your organization.
First of all, why should you?
Yeah.
Why should you use an English name?
So first of all, I work with the local community, the local tribe called the River People. So these mm-hmm. are the tribe that live along the Kinabatangan River, where they share the landscape with elephants. So Seratu Atai means solidarity, or in our language mean bersatu hati. So it's heart and everyone must come together.
Wow, that, yeah. I love that.
Yeah, so people always say, whenever they see elephant, is elephant belong to scientists or, you know, NGOs or government. It's never belong to us. So I want to plant in everyone's mindset that this elephant is belong to us. And if we want to see coexistence, if we want to create coexistence, all of us have come to come together. So that's how Sretu Atai comes about.
So how does this, you know, concept of unity guide your approach to protecting these elephants and building that coexistence that you speak of?
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, until even now, when we are talking about human-elephant conflicts, we always thought that, oh, it's because elephant comes to damage my crops, or, you know, or I feel insecure, I feel scared of the elephant, that's why conflict is there. But we forgot that inside that human and elephant conflict, there is a bigger issue, which is human and human conflict. We never talk to each other. So can I give you an example, Neil?
Yes, please. Yeah.
So for example, if elephants is behind your backyard, okay, and I have money, I can protect my farm with electric fencing. So now, you know, you will keep pushing the elephants to my farm. And because I have electric fences protecting my farm, I have no problem. But this elephant will go to the next neighbor. So we never speak to each other. So now you have some sort of mistrust because you feel that, hey, you can protect your farm, I can't. So then between you and me, we are having this mistrust, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's how... That's why we never get to solve the human-elephant conflicts, because first of all, we don't take into account elephant behavior. And second of all, we never speak to each other. We never communicate with each other about this problem. So that's why it's very hard to tackle this issue, the human and human conflicts, inhuman and elephant conflicts. Yeah. Remind me your question again.
No, I feel like you definitely addressed it. So yeah. you founded Sretu Atai in 2018, yep. From what I saw. And this was after you'd already spoken earlier on the show that you'd been in the field since 2003. So this is about like 15 years of kind of research within that vicinity. What sort of specific moment or, you know, crisis that made you realize, okay, me coming from this scientific angle isn't enough? Because you kind of spoken already about, you know, you're realizing these issues within the communities, but you've come from a science background. What was that transition there to realize, okay, this isn't enough here?
Right. So the first time when I was doing the research, I saw the struggles of elephants in Kinabatangan. Kinabatangan is very crowded. It was crowded when I was started, and it's even crowded now, you know, with people's activities. So I saw a group of female elephants were in their home in the forest of Kinabatangan. But Kinabatangan are surrounded with the oil palm plantation. So this plantation was trying to scare the elephants by firing the noise cannon. So it was very loud and the elephant getting very agitated and nervous. You can see they even ignore us, because they were so concerned about their safety. So then it is just that I realized that, okay, I have the data, but how do I translate this? And because my research is about elephant behavior, and nobody here believe that animals can make decisions, animals can learn. And that's what my research is all about. So how do I translate this research into, you know, like more layman, more language that public people can understand? And someone has to do this, and to do this without forcing people, you know, try to make people curious as well. So that's why I, at that moment, I feel that, okay, it's time for me to convince people that we misunderstood elephant a lot.
Yes. So you're now obviously based in Sabah. And Sabah is one of these environments in the world that is really being affected by climate change. It's affecting rainfall patterns and the forest ecosystem. How are these changes impacting, you know, the elephant behavior and the movement? And what sort of strategies are you implementing?
Yeah, so climate change do slowly affected not only the Bornean elephant, but the Asian elephants in general, right? So Bornean elephants are mostly restricted to the northern side of the island, right? Like you say, mostly in Sabah. So they avoid You know, they love low land. They avoid steep slopes, you know. And as we know that most of these low-lying areas are mostly found, you know, like, for example, in Lower Kinabatangan. So all this area now has been converted into agricultural land, to man-dominated landscape, basically. So the impacts of the climate change is now, you know, once if the water level rise, all these lowland are more susceptible for major flooding. And major flooding can reduce elephants' habitats to, you know, almost half of it. Right now, elephants are already struggling to use the space. With more major flooding, elephants will be pushed into, you know, higher ground, which mostly are, you know, agricultural area of where people we converted to other human activities. So that means it can increase conflicts between people and also elephants. So climate change is not something that we can control locally, because this is really, you know, due because of the global issues. Mm-hmm. But what we can do right now is to try to make sure that the landscape that the elephants can access is friendly to the elephants. So that's what we are trying, yes, to work with the stakeholders, mm-hmm, to make sure the elephant can still access this area so that people will be more resilient and elephants can be more accepted in this area.
Yes, it's about, you know, realizing you have this huge wide problem that you do not have direct control over, but saying, okay, what can we access? What can we implement to, you know, positively affect the local elephants and the local communities?
Right.
Now, I'm going to leave our listeners with the thought of the cascade effects of climate change as we go to our first break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Farina from Seratu Atai. We just left off speaking to Farina about her incredible journey through conservation biology to moving to Borneo and developing Seratu Atai, the solidarity between the elephant and the local communities to really impact what is going on with conservation in these areas. Now, we just spoke about the effects of climate change in Sabah, one of the northern regions of Borneo. And I have a feeling that Farina wants to say a bit more than she just alluded to prior to the break.
Yeah, so we are seeing most of Sabah are now dominated by oil palm plantations, right? It's a monoculture of plantations. And climate change is also affecting a lot on this industry. They, you know, with more rain, longer monsoons, most of this part of the area can be flooded, inundated, sometimes up to 3 months. And this can reduce a lot of, harvesting of the fruit, the productivity of the trees.
Yeah.
So we are working with some of these plantations. How can we change? Can we allow the elephants to use some of the area that are inundated or not that productive for the plantation? Can they set this aside as their high conservation value area, for example? So all these models are very new. All these ideas are very new. So to shift the paradigm will take a lot of time. But I can see that, you know, some of these can actually benefit the plantation industry or palm industry and also to the wildlife conservation in Sabah.
That's amazing. You know, you've just spoken there about habitat loss, right? What are the most pressing threats that are, you know, both instigating this conflict? Because I've spoken to a few organizations that work throughout Malaysia, and I know that the palm oil industry is affecting particularly Borneo due to the fact that there's different laws in regard to logging and accessibility of the land, because it's split between the Indonesian government and the Malay government, and you're at different stages. You know, you spoke earlier about how conservation biology was only just picking off the ground in 2003. It's almost that the Indonesian side, the Indonesian government side, when it comes in relation to palm oil, is still decades behind where Malaysia is at. The elephants are definitely not aware or going to abide by any of these borders, these government implemented borders. Now, yeah, relaying back to my question, what are the pressing threats in regard to the palm oil industry? And how does your work, you know, you're addressing both human and elephant-sided conflict. You're dealing with the community side, you're dealing with the animal conservation side. How is it all affected by what's going on?
Yeah, I feel that a little bit of frustration, frustrating on my side is that we always put band-aids. I always say that we always put band-aids on the symptoms. We never try to solve the root causes of human and elephant conflict, right? We always know.
You're like, we keep bleeding, we're putting bandages on it, but you're like, well, the we're still bleeding.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So we know, we always talk about development, but, you know, at the same time, it's the people on the ground that are suffering from the same development that we want to create for them. So the biggest threat would be that we are still developing, our country is still developing for our economics and things like this, but we sometimes forgot to, or we take for granted our precious environment, our precious forest, our precious wildlife. And once we do all this damage, then, you know, you want to cure them.
What are you seeing in terms of damage from these industries? Like, what have you witnessed on the ground?
So in Malaysia, in particular, we don't really see much damages because I think sustainability is something that our government and even the oil palm industry, they really, really want to do things better, because they know that without good ecosystem, it will affect the production of the oil palm. Having said that, we shouldn't do things just to tick the checklist. You see what I mean? Like, when you do when you do sustainability, but you want to get that certification for sustainability, we just do it basic.
Yes, I understand. You're saying there's a tick box, three ticks done, but we're stopping there because that's all we have to
do.
Rather than going above and beyond to what should actually be done.
Exactly.
Yes.
But I'm so lucky that I found several managers, several plantation controllers who wants to do better. And they also get a lot of pressure from their peers from the same industry, because they are going beyond the, you know, the basic, beyond the standards. So I want to support them.
I love that drive. You're being like, well, actually, they're not doing enough, so I'm going to do more.
Exactly. Because they know, yes. Some of them, they know that if we don't do better, if we don't protect the ecosystem, it will affect the industry. Only true planters that knows that they need mm-hmm. a good impact ecosystem. Soil is important. So if we, you know, after 3 cycles of planting oil palm, and each of the cycles is about 25 years, imagine what happened to the quality of the soil. So if we don't put this, then you will use more fertilizer, more herbicide. That will cost mm-hmm. a lot the industry. But if we can do better, then it will be good for the industry. They know this, but again, to change the paradigm will take a bit of time and support.
But it's lovely to hear that you have the drive to do that. From what I saw you, and what I've been hearing, you're working with a lot of community and you're doing a lot of community engagement programs. These are working directly, you know, with the farmers that are experiencing things like crop damage. I'd love for you to explain, like, how your education about elephant biology and behavior helps to reduce, you know, the fear and building the tolerance among the villagers that are directly affected because of that direct connection with the landscapes and direct connection with the elephant habitat.
Right. So I don't know how to give a simple analogy. For example, I'm a mother of 2. My daughter and mm-hmm. my son, they have different personality. My daughter, she's more mature, she's more calm compared to my son, who wants more attention. It's the same with elephants. Okay. It's the same with elephants. There are male elephant, which is, I don't really care whoever in front of me, I want to go, you know, like take the risk. However, there are other male elephants that, oh, I need a friend to go with me, you know. So we understand, so we learn each of this, the personality of elephants that come. They always come and visit the villages, the communities, land. So we want to be able to educate the community, saying who are these elephants and what they are, how do they behave. And even if you can't differentiate a male and a female elephants, and you just think them as an animal, then you will just alter the behavior because you keep harassing them. You don't really use the correct way to control them, to divert them peacefully. And if we change the elephant behavior, then we will be like India. You will have 300 to 400 people die annually. Thank God in Sabah, we don't have yet a case where elephant come with intention to kill people, because our elephants are still looking at us as part of the landscape, but we are not seeing them as part of the landscape. So that's why I feel education are important. Be there with the community.
So you're taking this, you know, interdisciplinary approach. You're combining like the elephant science with the community development. How does this extend into things like partnerships when it comes to funding? And what sorts of insights have you started to learn by implementing what is very much like a holistic strategy? And what has this revealed about, you know, the coexistence, especially now that the landscape's becoming more fragmented?
Yeah, for me, again, my work right now is trying to reduce the human and human conflicts. We need to be able to talk more transparent. We need to build the trust. So that's what we are doing right now. We want to build the trust with people. And then by doing that, we can support elephants, because all of the mitigations right now are just to stop elephants. When you know you can't stop them, they're big, they're intelligent, they need a lot of space. But if we can try to make people understand and increase their tolerance and make sure that they know that we are here to with you, you're not alone, then they want to protect the elephant. So that's what we're seeing right now.
Incredible. You know, there's going to be listeners out here who are very inspired by what you're saying. Now, they might be thinking, well, I would love to help, or I'd love to support this. What practical steps can individuals, you know, listening here or in general, take to support the Bornean elephant conservation, even from afar?
Yeah, I think even from afar, individuals can make so, you know, difference from the Borneo elephant conservation. First, I think everyone can be more informed consumers, for example. So one simple way is to support certified sustainable palm oil. I know it's not perfect, but trust me,
Yes, I mean, sustainable palm oil is a lot better than just general palm oil already. So
Sustainable palm oil helped me convince people who are not yet convinced to at least try to find ways how to coexist with people. Because much of the elephant's habitat overlap with the oil palm landscapes. And then people can also help by, you know, sharing credible information about coexistence. They can, reduce demand. I mean, try to promote, like, to reduce demand for unsustainable products. And they should support organizations that work directly with local communities and wildlife authorities.
I love that. Yeah. What I'm getting is, like, do what is within your control. Mm-hmm. Do what you are able to make impacts with. You know, your money, where you're putting your money, what are you sharing, what are you talking about? I love that.
Can I add a bit more to that, Neil?
Of course. Yeah, because
another thing, a lot of people, sometimes they say that I've been greenwashed by some of the industry players. But like, for example, I said, usually we promote, like, don't promote to ban the oil palm. I know certain countries are still not doing the correct way. They're still doing the deforestation. But if you ban the oil palm, they will change the crop to something else, right? It's still not good for them.
They'll just replace it with something, you know, that's economically going to benefit them completely. I mean, I've experienced that happening internationally. So
for me, it's better for us to keep pushing for, you know, all these certification to go beyond standards and just to, you know, not just taking wildlife as to protect them, but to do more.
Yes, absolutely. So I want to just bring it back to the elephants for a minute. So when I was looking into your work, you pioneered these elephant friendly corridors, you know, through these plantations that we've been talking about. Can you share a success story where, you know, creating this safe passage helped, you know, both the elephant and the farming community?
Yeah, I wouldn't take the credit on my own. Again,
Yes, when I say, I mean Sarah Atuatai in general.
Yeah. Yes. So basically, you know, like I said, there are several plantation controllers who already have that. Mm-hmm. They know that if we don't start now doing things correctly, we will lose the, you know, everything that we built so far. I mean, the industry built so far. For so many years, they've been harvesting from the nature, but they never give it back. So there are several plantations, you know, owners who wants to do a different thing. However, when they're trying to do things, not the usual things that other people do, people will say that, will critique them.
Moving away from
say that, you know, this industry has been doing so many bad things. So they always feel that whatever we're trying to do, people will still blame us. So they come, they reach out to me and to Sri Tuatai and another NGOs in the landscape, Hutan KOCP. So they said, please help us. We want to do something and we have the ideas. We want to set aside this corridor. So because we have the information about the wildlife.
So you're having these landowners come to you and say, actually, we want to do this.
Yeah, and we combine our experience, our knowledge, and we use our credibility to tell the world that this effort is good. We don't even have donors at the beginning to help us funding the project, because people say that don't work with the industry, they are very bad industry. But we got some donors who wants to take the risk, want to build the model. So we are very lucky. So this is how we come up with the idea of creating pathway for elephants, for orangutan in the oil palm. And I'm happy to share with all of you, we have now 7 plantations that are combined, want to combine and do the corridor, and connect them up to the wildlife sanctuary.
Amazing. That's incredible to hear. You know, talking about these collaborations, and in particular with regard to the oil palm industry, it's often portrayed as being incompatible with wildlife conservation. It's saying, well, no, you can't have oil palm and you can't have conservation. It doesn't work together. But you're showing that, well, actually, that there's people that are coming to you and saying, well, no, we want to do this. We want to try and figure out ways that we can operate together. How has your work with these companies started to, you know, challenge this narrative, whether that's in Malaysia or wider and beyond?
Yeah, actually, we are still struggling to get the supports from a bigger, people in the same industry. Like I said, like I told you, that there are people who wants to go beyond the standards, but there are people also who wants to just keep things at the, you know, at the surface. So how do we work on that? I think that's why we want to start small with these 7 plantations. We are hoping that we can show a model that coexistence can be a reality in this oil palm landscapes. Again, the trust between us and the plantation, the industry, we must make sure that, you know, we can maintain the trust, that we're not doing this to whatever reason. We want to do this for you and for the wildlife, right?
Yes. And when you say industry trust, are you talking about the industry as in the conservation industry, or are you talking about industry's trust as in the palm oil industry?
Both.
Because
you have conservationists who's very in,
they're like, why are you working with them? Yeah, like they're against
exactly,
us, like, they're causing problems.
Why do you do this? Yes. Are you trying to greenwash on behalf, I mean, for them? No, I don't do that. Mm-hmm. Because elephants need this landscape, so I do whatever that.
No, I see your thought process. You're like, well, look, they're causing all these issues and we're here trying to stop these issues. Why are we not trying to work together to, like, mitigate? You know, we're all trying to work towards something. You know, I definitely see that.
In Sabah, the deforestation, whatever, it's already passed. So how do we...
Yeah, you're like the tree's gone. The palm oil industry is already there. Yes,
how
I
do
see
we
that.
Make this landscape a better landscape for wildlife, for orangutan, for elephants? For sure, we still have to fight for deforestation in other areas. Mm-hmm. Like now, people are talking about the industries going to India, to other places. So this one, we have...
You're like, you can fight the expansion, but there are areas where it's like, well, we've already changed the landscape. We've already altered the habitat there. How do we then work within those areas to ensure that what we're looking out for, you know, the conservation of this species, is what is prevalent? That we're making sure that these species are surviving and these landscapes are altered.
Correct. Thank you, Neil.
Well, no, sorry. I was just like bouncing off of that. I really like that thought process.
I really like that you understand my situation.
No, yes, it's actually really interesting, because I've heard so many different sides to it. You know, people working on different ends that are very passionate about being anti-palm oil. But this is the first time that I've really like had the opportunity to engage with yourself, who's someone who's working in conjunction with the reality of what you're being faced with. It's like, well, I'm passionate about conservation. I'm passionate about these elephants and their landscape has changed. Yes, I don't want more of their landscape to be changed, but what am I doing with the landscape that's in front of me? And this is what we're here for. We're showing, okay, look, things are changed. We live in an altered world. What are we doing within this altered world to ensure that A, things aren't getting worse, and that we're adapting within that space? So with Bornean elephants, now we kind of touched on this point earlier of people calling them pygmy elephants. Now, this isn't fully accurate. Like, I'd love for you to talk about, you know, the myths around Bornean elephants and why accurate scientific communication is really important for their particular conservation.
At the beginning, was not too concerned about the word pygmy until one day, I was in the field with some people, tourists actually, and a tour guide. And then we were with a group of female herds, and the tour guide was showing that a baby elephant, and there was a mom elephant, right? Adult female and a baby. And this tour guide was showing the baby, that is the pygmy elephant, and that the bigger one is the Asian elephant. So, you know, this already given. So people from around the world imagine that our elephants are that small, and they thought that coexistence is very easy because you live with a small elephant. Right. But our elephants are normal elephants, and you know, it's normal that people are scared of big animals. So I think by having using the word pygmy give a little bit of, you know, misconception that our elephants are small, so it shouldn't be a problem to coexist with them. And that's why I feel that it is very important to stop using the word pygmy.
Absolutely. Terminology is so important because it affects a cascade of things. If people start associating, you know, pygmy with small, which means smaller impact, which can lead to things like lesser funding, you know, and wider cascades of effect. And on that note, I'm going to leave you to the thought about how our words hold impact, and we'll be back after this short break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Farina from Seratu Atai. We just left off following the wider landscape of what is going on with the palm oil industry in Borneo and how this has affected the way that Farina, in particular, as a conservationist, is working with habitats that have already been fragmented, and how that has led to challenges both within the palm oil industry and the conservation industry. So, Farina, you working in this very volatile field where you have, you know, people shouting their voices all over the place, you're still doing some incredible work. And you successfully halted a development project, right, that would have fragmented the elephant habitat further. And you did this using research data. I'd love for you to tell our listeners about what was going on there and how this made an impact.
Yeah, so we call it elephant since 2008, collaring elephants just in Kinabatangan to understand the movement, what are the critical area for elephants, and we want to understand their home range so that we know that where are the areas that we need to prioritize for protection. So while doing this, suddenly we heard a news that the government wants to build a bridge in the Sukau, one of the village. And the bridge itself is not a big problem, but the road that they're going to connect after the bridge is the one that really make us feel a little bit concerned about it. And the excuses that they use why they need to build the road is just not, it's not logic at all, for example. Mm-hmm. We see that the only one that will benefit from the bridge is the oil palm plantation. Now they can transport the fruits easier. So what we use the movement from the collared data showing that how dense, how important is this road for elephants. So it's in the wildlife sanctuary. First of all, should be protected. And it's very visual. It's on a map. And you can see each of the dots It's so many dots on the area where they want to build the road and the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So we do, again, we combine all the NGOs, you know, and we got support from the Sabah department, from the local communities, and we managed to convince the bigger government, saying that this will first of all not benefit people, and tourism is a big thing in Kinabatangan. Imagine what will happen to the elephants and to the habitats and to the tourism activities in Kinabatangan if we don't protect this area. And I think because of that, people, and then we get also, you know, people's like Sir David Attenborough to speak also about these issues, and combining all of this, the data, people, we managed to convince them that project is cancelled until now.
Wow, what an achievement. Now, Farina, everything that I've heard from you, you're doing like amazing project after amazing project, and you've had such, you know, global impact, I would say. You won an award recently, right? And this was the Whitley Award, correct?
Yes, I am a winner.
Yes, congratulations. Now, what does this prize mean for Seretua Thai? Like, what does it mean for scaling? And I'd love to kind of know what has been your proudest achievement, both, you know, whether it's winning the award or whether what you can do with the award now. Because it's a cash, you get money for this award,
yeah,
if I'm correct.
Correct,
right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So as you know, lately, the funding for conservation has been reduce, especially with some policies from, you know, the rich country, right? And again, this award means, because the project that we propose is to create a consortium of these 7 plantations. So we worked with 1 plantation before, and we want to we get more plantations to join the force. And Whitley is one of the example who wants to take the risk. They know that this is very risky. Trying to convince to shift the paradigm is not something that can, you know, it's only 1 or 2 years work. It's a long-term commitment. And getting the funding from Whitley means that this work is important. And it is a risk that worth that for us to take. So that's why I'm very happy. And I know that the oil palm industry also knows that there are people out there wants to see this happen. There are people out there supporting, you know, their efforts, and hopefully it will bring more and more opportunity.
That is beautifully said, and I wish you all of the best with, you know, utilizing that award, and hopefully it leads to work that will lead to a cascade of, you know, funding and wider impact. What is one message that you would want listeners to remember about why protecting these elephants and wider species matter for entire ecosystems?
Neil, I believe that everything that are created for us in this world have their own role that they play. And if we take things for granted, one, we lose them, then we will see the impacts. So I believe that elephants have their role that they play to maintain the ecosystem. It's just that we altered this ecosystem so much that now, you know, they can't really play their role. And I want to make sure that in my lifetime, I build the foundations that the future generation can continue, so that we can still keep the ecosystem. It's not for the wildlife, it is for us, for humanity to sustain. And I want to prevent, and I want to do all my best to be able to prevent this. Mm-hmm. And this is when looking at my children, I don't want them to suffer. Climate change is a big issue, so I want to do my best. I know it is, you know, sometimes feel frustrating. There are a lot of things that you can't control. But we must celebrate small success. And we must understand that we have a big force. People want to see change. And we must come together. All of us must Seretu Atal.
That was lovely. I was going to ask what your final message of hope was, but that you left it off so well there that I think that was the perfect conclusion to our conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us today, Farina. And thank you all for listening to Our Altered World today. If you enjoyed the show, I'd love for you to visit our website, OurAlteredWorld.com, where you can join our community and find more information on upcoming shows. You can also find some of my work on social media at Flunking Monkey, FlunkingMonkey. And until next time, I hope you all have a great day.